So, imagine you just invented the jet engine, right? And your very first, like, brilliant idea is to strap it onto a wooden horse-drawn carriage.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a disaster waiting to happen.
Exactly. You fire it up, and for, I don't know, about 2 seconds, you are moving faster than anyone in history.
Right.
And that, you know, the wheels splinter, the frame completely shatters, and the entire vehicle just violently shakes itself to pieces.
Because the foundation just wasn't built for it.
Exactly. It was never built to handle that kind of raw power. And that is exactly what the world's top executives are doing with artificial intelligence right now in 2026.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, everyone has the technology now. Everyone is championing it.
Right. But if you look closely at the landscape, you see this massive glaring divide. You've got a handful of organizations seeing these absolute quantum leaps in value, and then you have everyone else just spinning their wheels,
Yeah.
strapping million-dollar engines to, well, wooden carriages.
It's the illusion of progress, really. Like, you buy the software, you deploy all the licenses, you tell your board that you're an quote unquote AI first company,
Yeah.
and you just sit back and wait for the magic to happen. But the reality of adoption is entirely different from the reality of true transformation.
Which is really the beating heart of our deep dive today. We are looking at a truly fascinating piece of source material for you. The orgchange.ai dispatch from April 2026.
Such a great read.
It really is. And our mission today is to extract the critical aha moments from the case studies in this dispatch, you know, to understand what is actually separating the winners from the wheel spinners.
Right.
And the dispatch drops its core thesis right there in the introduction. AI does not change an organization by itself. Leaders have to change the operating system around the AI. Okay, let's unpack this.
Well, the dispatch makes one point with just unusual clarity throughout all its data. The scale of AI, like how big of an impact it actually makes, depends far less on the brilliance of the tool itself. Yeah, it depends almost entirely on the discipline of the transformation. Because, you know, we're conditioned to obsess over the capabilities of the model, right? The processing power, the token limits, all that tech spec
Well,
stuff.
for sure. It's all anyone talks about.
Exactly. But the dispatch tells us to basically ignore that. Look at the people, look at the processes and the accountability structure surrounding that model. That's the secret.
Which brings us to the first massive trap that companies fall into. Dan Didio, he's the global AI consulting leader at EY, he calls this the trap of automating yesterday.
Right, automating yesterday. It's such a perfect phrase.
It is. Didio argues that if an organization just uses AI to do its current tasks faster, it's this massive missed opportunity. I mean, you're just building for the past at that
Yeah,
point.
you're not evolving.
Exactly. It has to be about business model reinvention, not just, you know, tactical headcount reduction. In fact, the dispatch points out that for every company cutting headcount because of AI, more than twice as many are actually reinvesting in their people to do entirely new things.
What's fascinating here is how clearly this plays out in the real world. Like, there's this anonymized pharmaceutical case study in the report.
Oh, yeah, the pharma one. Yeah.
Right. It is the ultimate example of strapping a jet engine to a carriage. So this pharma company, they deployed AI in their drug discovery phase to accelerate molecular exploration.
Okay.
And from a strictly technological standpoint, it was a massive success, like a total home run. The AI was finding viable drug candidates at a speed that was just previously unimaginable.
But because they were just automating yesterday, they completely ignored the rest of the business model.
Exactly.
Like, let me break down what happened here,
Yeah.
because it is honestly a terrifying lesson in operational bottlenecks for any of you listening. They supercharged the discovery phase, right?
Yeah.
But the downstream clinical development, like the human trials, the regulatory pathways, the operational logistics, none of that had been redesigned.
Nothing downstream changed at all.
Right. So they essentially widened the highway to 10 lanes, only to have all 10 lanes merge into a single manual toll booth.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah, all those rapidly discovered molecules just slammed into this massive traffic jam.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't actually get any faster at bringing drugs to market. They just got faster at piling up candidates that were waiting for clinical trials.
Right. And in doing that, the AI actually became a stress test. Like, it exposed the weakness in the rest of their operating system.
Yeah.
The leadership had to face this really hard truth. Isolated AI wins are just not enough. Like, a successful pilot isn't the end of the journey. It's merely the catalyst for redesigning the broader operating model. You have to shift toward end-to-end process reinvention.
Because you can't just, you know, reinvent one piece of the assembly line and expect the factory to somehow output twice as much.
Exactly. You just break the factory.
Right. But building that new end-to-end vehicle requires foundational materials that actually work. And this is where the dispatch gets into the unglamorous kind of gritty but absolutely vital groundwork of data quality.
Oh, data quality. It's not sexy, but it's everything.
It really is. So there's this framework in the report called the 9-square grid. It maps out execution across people, process, and technology.
Mm-hmm.
And under the process metrics, there's a statistic that literally stopped me in my tracks.
Let me guess, the 94%.
Yes. 94% of organizations have initiated data quality improvement efforts specifically for AI.
Which is just a near universal acknowledgement of a massive problem. Like, everyone knows their data is a mess.
Yeah, exactly.
Erin Benet, the chief audit and risk officer at Humana, she points out in the text that it's just the classic garbage in, garbage out scenario.
Right.
Because if we're moving toward agentic AI, meaning, you know, AI systems that don't just answer questions on a screen, but actually actively take autonomous actions across your network.
Which is where everything is heading.
Exactly. You absolutely cannot build that on top of messy, siloed, or inaccurate data. The AI will just execute bad decisions at light speed.
Okay, so I have to push back on this a little bit.
Yeah.
When we start talking about audit, risk, and compliance, like what the industry calls GRC to a lot of leaders, that just sounds like a massive bottleneck.
Oh, absolutely. Red tape.
Right. It sounds like this bureaucratic committee designed specifically to slow down innovation. So if the goal is to build a faster vehicle, how does adding heavy administrative guardrails actually help an organization move faster?
It's the exact paradox that organizations are trying to solve right now. Like, governance only slows you down when it's siloed and reactive. When it's integrated and proactive, it operates like the brakes on a race car.
Oh, I like that.
Right. Yeah. You can only drive a car into a corner at 150 miles an hour if you have absolute total trust in the brakes. And the dispatch uses Humana to demonstrate this. They didn't just add more compliance officers to their payroll. They used AI to fundamentally rewire their oversight.
So they essentially built a better braking system.
Exactly. Because historically, Humana had separate teams for like audit, risk, business continuity, third party risk.
All totally fine.
Yeah. They all spoke different languages. They required different reports. But Humana used AI to analyze these massive risk inventories and surface interdependencies across the whole enterprise.
Wait, let's drill down into that mechanism for a second.
Yeah.
How does an AI actually surface an interdependency and risk? Like, what does that look like practically?
Okay, so imagine a severe weather event shuts down a supplier in Asia.
Yeah.
In the old siloed model, the supply chain team knows about the delay, obviously, but the third-party risk team, they might not connect it to a compliance issue until, say, a quarterly review.
Oh, wow.
And the finance team won't even see the revenue hit for a month. But with their new system, the AI monitors the data continuously. It instantly flags the supplier outage, cross-references it with business continuity plans, and immediately alerts the internal audit team of the combined risk exposure.
So it connects the dots.
In seconds. Dots that would take 5 separate human departments weeks to reconcile. They basically created a shared risk language.
That is a massive shift. So instead of, you know, 5 different compliance officers knocking on a manager's door asking for 5 different manual reports, the AI provides this unified real-time dashboard.
Exactly.
But if we're really talking about speed, the Navin case study in the dispatch is where this gets truly revolutionary.
Oh, Navin is a fantastic example.
Yeah. So for context, Navin handles travel, payments, and expense management for thousands of companies. And their head of audit, risk, and compliance, Erin Dempsey-Hewetter, she noted that the goal of their AI-driven GRC platform is not to centralize control.
Right.
It is to distribute risk intelligence.
And that phrase right there, distributing risk intelligence, is critical because the traditional model forces frontline workers to submit requests to a central compliance authority.
And wait.
And wait days, sometimes weeks, for approval. But Navin flipped that entirely. They give the business owners, the actual people making daily operational decisions, access to the exact same risk data that the audit team sees.
So governance isn't a toll booth you have to stop at anymore.
No, not at all.
It's like having a GPS dashboard right in front of the driver. Like, it shows you where the traffic jams and hazards are in real time, so you can just navigate around them yourself without having to constantly call headquarters and ask for directions.
That is precisely how it functions. GRC transforms from a post-mortem exercise, you know, where an auditor comes in after a failure to tell you what you did wrong.
Which everyone loves.
Right. It transforms from that into an early warning system. You can redirect resources before an issue becomes an actual incident. But, and this is the friction point, a lot of companies misdistributing intelligence drastically alters the accountability structure.
Oh, for sure. Because if you have the GPS, you can't blame headquarters when you drive into a ditch.
Right. You can't plead ignorance anymore. Hewetter points out that AI accelerates the work, sure, but it does not absolve anyone from judgment. If anything, it raises the bar for human accountability.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, if a business owner has access to all the risk data in real time on their dashboard, and they just choose to ignore it to push a project through quickly, they can no longer claim they didn't know the risks. The safety net is visible to everyone, which means the responsibility is shared by everyone.
That makes total sense, but honestly, it brings us to a massive human problem.
Oh, yeah. The people side of this is tough.
It really is. So, okay, you have the vision for reinvention. You've cleaned up your data. You've distributed your governance so people can move fast but safely. But how do you actually get a workforce to embrace this? Because if we look at the reality on the ground, people are deeply anxious.
They're terrified.
Yeah. They're worried about their jobs, or they're just, you know, completely overwhelmed by the prospect of having to learn yet another complex system while just trying to do their day jobs.
And the 9-Square Grid provides a stark reality check on this exact issue. When measuring people readiness, 51% of leaders cite skills as a top need for AI readiness.
Over half.
But only 38% say their organizations actually have the staff skills and training required.
Wow.
So half the leaders know they desperately need the skills, but barely a third actually have them. It's a huge gap.
So how do the winners in the dispatch actually bridge that gap? I mean, it comes down to a very deliberate pilot-to-scale strategy.
Yeah, absolutely.
They don't just buy the software,
yeah,
send out a mass company-wide email mandating its use, and just hope everyone figures it out. Advocate Health is a masterclass in this approach. They partnered with Microsoft to test a tool called Dragon Copilot for nurses.
And this uses ambient AI, which is a really important technological distinction to make here.
Walk us through that. What is ambient AI?
So ambient AI means there isn't a screen the nurse has to actively type into or like a chatbot they have to query. The system just runs securely in the background, processing the natural audio of the room.
That sounds like magic.
It kind of is. It listens to the conversation between the nurse and the patient, and it automatically drafts the electronic health record documentation based on that verbal exchange alone.
Wow. Now, I want you to think about the stakes here. In healthcare, it is literally life and death, mm-hmm. and burnout is astronomically high. If you roll out an AI that listens to patient conversations poorly, the friction and the anxiety that would cause would just be catastrophic.
It would ruin the whole initiative.
Exactly. So Advocate Health didn't mandate it from the top down. They piloted it in actual clinical environments first.
Yeah.
They sat down with the nurses, co-created the new workflows, and set up continuous feedback loops. They had to validate how the tool fit across different care settings. Because, I mean, an emergency room nurse works very differently than an oncology nurse.
Totally different workflows. And by piloting in the real world before scaling, they completely de-risked the implementation. They created these early wins that the nurses could actually feel in their day-to-day shifts.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine. A nurse doesn't have to end a grueling 12-hour shift by sitting at a terminal for 2 hours just typing up notes. The AI drafts it, the nurse just reviews and approves it.
That's a game changer.
It's massive. Mercy, which is another healthcare organization in the dispatch, took a similar approach and found that ambient AI was actually capturing the invisible care nurses provide.
Invisible care? What does that mean?
Like the comforting of a family member or nuanced lifestyle advice context that a rushed, exhausted nurse might just leave out of a manual chart because they don't have time to type it all out.
Oh, wow. That is incredibly powerful. Yeah. And when a nurse sees a peer saving hours on documentation and actually capturing a richer patient narrative, that social proof does the heavy lifting for adoption.
Absolutely.
Like, it is infinitely more powerful when the endorsement comes from a colleague in the trenches with you
mm-hmm.
rather than an executive sitting in a boardroom somewhere.
Yeah.
And SAP actually took this exact psychological trigger and weaponized it for good across their entire enterprise.
Oh, the SAP example is brilliant. They formalized the peer-to-peer concept by building what they call an AI ambassador network.
I love that.
Right. So whenever SAP deploys a new AI platform, whether it's machine learning for complex invoice matching and finance, or AI for resume screening in HR, they pair that technological deployment with this internal network of human ambassadors.
And these aren't like external consultants dropping in. These are regular employees embedded within the teams who have just been trained up as super users.
Yep, they sit right next to their peers.
Yeah, they sit next to their peers, they spread best practices, and they increase the technical fluency of the department totally organically.
The psychological impact of that really cannot be overstated. It fundamentally rewires how the workforce perceives the technology. It positions AI as an augmentation of the worker's capabilities rather than this, you know, top-down replacement threat. If an executive tells you to use AI, you instantly worry about your job. But if the guy at the desk next to you says, hey, let me show you how this tool saved me 3 hours of manual data entry yesterday so I could leave on time, your resistance just evaporates.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. If you read through all these case studies like Advocate Health, SAP, Humana, Nevon, that anonymized pharma company, the real differentiator in 2026 isn't who bought the AI first.
Not at all.
It's not about who has the biggest budget for technology. The real differentiator is who is learning how to operationalize it the fastest within their human and process frameworks.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the most successful transformations treat AI explicitly as a change management journey.
Yeah.
You do not start by trying to boil the ocean. You start where the work is visible. You prove the value in context, like those nurses seeing their documentation time plummet. You build trust through that distributed governance, like Naven's GPS dashboard.
Right.
You use peer networks to train the workforce. And only then, once that foundation is rock solid, do you actually scale.
So what does this all mean for you, listening to this right now? It means we need to completely reframe our approach to this technology.
Hmm.
AI is no longer just a tooling conversation.
It hasn't been for a while.
Exactly. We have to stop talking about it like it's just a faster version of a spreadsheet. It is a leadership conversation. It is an operating model conversation. To succeed, you have to align three things simultaneously: workforce readiness, process redesign, and technical enablement.
Because if you only focus on the tech, you end up with the pharma company's bottleneck, you know, the 10-lane highway merging into a single poll booth.
Yep.
If you only focus on the process without clean data, you get the agentic AI executing garbage decisions at light speed. And if you ignore workforce readiness, you just face massive resistance and a bunch of unused expensive tools. They all have to move together.
Which basically brings us to the ultimate synthesis of everything in the dispatch.
This raises an important question, actually. When you are doing all of this hard work, when you're cleaning your data, setting up ambassador networks, redesigning your end-to-end processes, what is the actual horizon you are aiming for? Like, what is the ultimate goal of AI adoption?
To answer that, we really have to go back to Dan Didio from EY.
Mm.
Because he provided a concept in this dispatch that I think perfectly encapsulates the whole mission. He said, AI lifts the floor, but it's human ingenuity and people that lift the ceiling.
It's just a profound way to look at the relationship between humans and machines. The technology establishes a new, elevated baseline of what is possible. It does the mundane work. It processes the massive data sets. It drafts the clinical notes.
It does the heavy lifting.
Yeah. It lifts the floor so nobody has to operate down in the mud of manual, repetitive tasks anymore.
But the ceiling line, the absolute upper limit of the value your organization can create, the radical new business models you can invent, the entirely new ways you can serve your customers, that ceiling is only pushed higher by human ingenuity. It is pushed higher by people who now have the time, the clean data, and the integrated operating system to actually think, create, and build the future.
The technology gives you the speed, but the humans decide the destination.
I love that. But it does leave us with one final thought. If AI truly lifts the ceiling of human ingenuity, what happens to the companies who successfully build this airplane?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, does the traditional 40-hour work week even survive this transition?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Right. If an ambassador network and an ambient AI can eliminate 15 hours of manual data entry a week for an employee, do we just fill those 15 hours with more tasks? Or does this new operating system force us to fundamentally redefine what a job actually is? Perhaps the ultimate transformation isn't just how a company operates, but how society values human time when productivity is no longer constrained by the clock. Definitely something to mull over as you look at the workflows in your own organization. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the orgchange.ai dispatch. We'll catch you next time.